Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What song is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's, yeah, they have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. I'm the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down Twanfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
I don't mean to alarm anybody regarding the size of the task facing the Republic of Ireland at the Aviva Stadium, but you know the whole Griezmann-Mbappe internal strife dynamic? I think that might have been overplayed a tad, maybe by us last week, if their on-field chemistry at the Stade de France on Friday night is anything to go by. The French put 4 goals past the Netherlands. They also left a few behind them, including one that could have been a contender for greatest counter-attacking goal ever scored if it had been finished. You're welcome to your Ireland versus France preview pod. This is coming out, we're talking late Sunday night, so we wanted to give you guys as much time as possible to digest this over the course of the Monday, or wherever you listen to it, before our opening European qualifier against the World Cup finalists. Hey Ken, hey Murph.
Hey Owen, how's it going?
Hey Owen, how you doing? Who are you saying was overplaying the Griezmann and Mbappe stuff?
Us, Ken. The royal us. I mean, you.
Me?
Wow. Yeah, you were stirring the shit, Ken. Come on. Let's be honest.
Stirring the shit.
I think I pointed out that the story didn't make any sense. You didn't listen to the end of my comments.
No, that's not what lodged in my brain. I got excited about this possible international retirement of Griezmann, and next thing I see him jumping on top of Mbappe's shoulders after Mbappe sets him up for a goal. Do you know the counter-attack I'm talking about, when they nearly scored an absolute worldie? It was in the second half. There was a corner headed away. It was Hernandez, I think, with the first little deft touch. Then Mbappe, both of them sort of chest/stomach control, first time passes. That put Coleman into space, which he likes a bit of space, so he tears up the pitch, then slows down to produce this delicate clip to the back post. The ball hangs there invitingly for Kolomouani, who really should have scored. I mean, certainly had a good chance to score, but makes a mess of his volley. If it had gone in, I mean, we may as well not turn up at Lansdowne Road, but it didn't. So they only scored 4 goals, a couple of which were absolutely amazing. But listen, let's not lose our nerve so early in this podcast. Okay, this is a fixture that has caused us some difficulty down the years.
God, Thierry Henry has controlled the ball basketball style.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the 1978 World Cup qualifier, actually.
Il est faute de Giles.
Il est faute de Giles. That one mightn't... That was a World Service one, so maybe our Monday only listeners are going, what the fuck? Listen, go become a member and you can listen to the entire backstory behind that one. But let's just say, il n'est pas fault de Giles, according to Giles himself in a subsequent interview with Vincent Brown in McGill magazine the following year, when he was, it was a pass underplayed, but their French commentator didn't seem to think so. They're only human, these French lads. They make mistakes as well.
Kylian Mbappe, supposedly one of the best players in the world, on a penalty kick, gets denied. Mbappe gets denied one of the best in the world. Ain't no way that should happen. Ain't no way.
So listen, we're going to talk to Philippe Auclair today, see if we can have any, if there are any crumbs of comfort ahead of this match. It goes without saying, the Tuesday's pod will be all post-match reaction for members only. Secondcaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT. We're going to attack anyway, Ken. we're not going to, the shackles will remain off, according to Stephen Kenny. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind like a couple of shackles. I mean, I don't know, why do we have to be such absolutes about the shackles? It's either all on or all
off. We're very, very comfortable in possession. Murph, we're very, very comfortable in possession. As comfortable as any team in Europe now at possession. Why would we change now? Said Kenny.
Okay.
Well, because we're playing France. Are we the most as comfortable as any team in Europe at possession?
I would say a couple of teams come to mind, you know. France, Croatia.
I think in comparison to playing how we play now, in comparison to how our own team played a few years ago, we might have made one of the biggest jumps in European football in that regard, in terms of change of style. But the way Kenny phrased that, it's you know, it's listen, he's not shy in talking up his philosophy and all that kind of stuff. We know all that. But anyway, So what do you think about this all out attack we're going to go with?
Well, first of all, can I say it's pretty disappointing that Callum O'Dowd is injured. Yeah. I'm sure Stephen Kenny's pretty good at about that too, because after the game on Thursday, he was raving about Callum O'Dowda. You know, he was raving about his pace, and he was talking about how vital pace was going to be against France. So now, O'Dowda, groin strain, not playing. Oh, Jesus Christ. So he was, I mean, I'm sure he was definitely going to be in the team, and now he won't be. I guess it's going to be James McClain. James McClain, always available, and I'm sure he'll, as always, give his maximum to the cause as we play against France. I mean, you're going on about this Holland France Holland game. That's good for us.
France winning 4-0 and showing absolutely no after.
The only way that could have been better for us is if France had won 8-0.
I'm kind of with the Fairview correspondent here.
I want to hear the rationale first.
Well, number one, they've absolutely smashed Holland to pieces, and that's good. Holland being one of our rivals. Ronald Koeman is the new manager of the Netherlands, I should call him. Not everybody is impressed with Ronald Koeman. He is a manager who divides opinion a little bit, and I'd say the division in his opinion will be, or the division of opinion about him is edging a bit more towards the this is not the right man side after losing 4-0. See, remember that Louis van Gaal had been the manager for the last while, had become immensely popular, had actually completely moved away from both his own and the Dutch national team's kind of historic style. You know what I mean? He had basically said, look, we actually don't have the players to play the way that we think we always should play. And anyway, I'm not even that convinced about it myself anymore. I'm going to try a few different things here. And started playing, you know, 3-5-2 and, you know, going much more defensive and counter-attacking. It was pretty successful. They played one of the most exciting World Cup matches ever against Argentina. Okay, they didn't win, but like Argentina had better players. I think that, you know, people were, and they took them to penalties. I think that, you know, people in Holland were overall pretty impressed with how the team went. Got knocked out in the quarterfinal. Koeman comes in. You know, we've got Koeman again. You know, because they do have a sort of rotating system where it's like four or five guys keep getting the job over and over again, you know. Koeman, remember, left the job to join Barcelona previously, and then obviously that didn't go great, although maybe nobody. So he's like, okay, we're going to go back to the 4-3-3. It's, you know, no more of this Van Gaal weird. He's kind of gone totally off the rails. So he basically goes back to the 4-3-3. Remember that that had been sort of, Van Gaal was doing it to some extent to help out Virgil van Dijk a little bit, I think. They go back to the 4-3-3. Van Dijk is pretty much the only first choice defender they've got, because they had this virus which took out De Ligt, and it took out, who were the other players who got knocked out by the virus? I mean, they lost a couple of top players. Frankie de Jong was obviously injured. Gakpo was taken out. So they actually had a massively weakened team with, you know, uncertain under a new manager who's now going to have more problems to deal with as a result of this result. They're playing against the France team, playing at home in front of their home France for the first time since the World Cup, you know, saying goodbye to their old legends, welcoming in Mbappe as the hero. Griezmann's trying to show everyone that he's, you know, he's not actually feeling annoyed about being passed over. you know, Mbappe's showing everyone that he actually likes Griezmann, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's all of this. It was all absolutely set up for them to smash Holland, and they did that. And, well,
now it comes to hangover.
They must feel absolutely delighted with themselves.
Yeah. The self-satisfaction levels, even off for a French football team, are off the charts right now.
They really are. Because, I mean, you can't do much better than beating Holland 4-0. Anyway, then they've got to go and play this other game, which is against some absolute, like, who is it? You know, consults, checks notes, you know. Like, I mean, Ireland, the attitude, now that since we mentioned it, even Hal, I think the attitude of our European friends to this country in football is best summed up by that scene in the Louis van Gaal documentary when he's sitting there with the two De Boer twins weirdly sitting in the back seat of his small car. And they reminisce about the time they lost to Northern Ireland in the 2001 mm-hmm. or the 2002 World Cup qualifiers. And nobody remembers that it wasn't Northern Ireland. They're just like, yeah, you know, sometimes you have an off day and you can lose to Northern Ireland. You know, that's football. So that's the way they see it. So France are playing Ireland or Northern Ireland or somebody like this. They know they're not going to get any credit if they win. They just have to turn up, get the points, go home, forget this ever happened. That's their mindset. And that's the best possible mindset for a team that's playing against Ireland that we have to get a result against. I'm sorry, but
Been following Mbappe's press conference today and Deschamps for that matter? Ireland play an interesting system, says Mbappe, with three at the back. They have a reputation for playing a physical style, but they also play a lot of good football, so it's not going to be easy for us. Which is honestly a more detailed answer than almost any other captain has given about the Republic of Ireland team. Deschamps goes deep. He says there's loads of different players compared to the team that we played in 2016. There's a new generation now. Ferguson poses a threat. He's a good player. Mikey Johnston has joined the team as well. It's a mix. Yeah. So in fairness, he at least watched the Latvia game.
I mean, he watched a 4-minute clip of the last game.
Yeah, it's true that I think Ireland have enthusiasm, determination. It's part of their football DNA, but that's not everything. They also have quality. They're capable of playing on the ground. They play a different system, this Ireland team. They like to play three at the back. Okay, so I'm just saying, we give out when they come, when people come over and go, well, they play a British-style long ball. At least these guys have done a modicum of research ahead of the game.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's true. They are, they have been.
That's literally the most respectful thing that's ever been said about us as a footballing nation. I have to say that. That is, there's literally no one has spoken with that level of respect for us ever.
They're diplomatic, but you know, they can pay lip service to this stuff. But do you think they really believe any of that stuff that they're saying for 1 second?
Certainly, that's certainly not the case.
Clearly not.
I suppose my friend at the embassy must have, the ambassador, of course, being my friend.
Oh, of course.
Must have got involved there. You know, he's a diplomat to his shoelaces, that man. He really is.
See, the French, you know, I feel like France regards Ireland, you know, with a kind of a fondness, but not with respect. Mm. You know, they don't respect us. They never really have. And I don't see that changing ahead of this. Now, is that going to be enough to make the difference in this game? Probably not. I mean, you mentioned on the Stephen Kenny's comments in the press conference yesterday, which I thought were really quite interesting. Like, I mean, the question that he was asked was essentially ended, or it was like, you know, France, wow, they smashed Holland, Jesus. Do you maybe end up thinking maybe we should approach this game, we should take a more conservative approach? Mm-hmm. That was the word, conservative. And Stephen Kenny reacts badly to that word, you know? So his response was essentially to say, no, not a chance. Absolutely, definitely not. You know, why would we do that now? Like, why would we change that? Why would we take a step back now, was what he said.
That's interesting, you know, isn't it? It's like, it's not a, it's just like the reality of the situation. If you're playing against a really good team. I mean, we don't have to be like absolute slaves to the system here, do we? You know,
well, I thought exactly the same thing, actually, Kieran, that it's interesting that he equated the word conservative to the temptation to set up a little more conservatively. That was exactly how the question was phrased. And he sort of reacted to that as though that would be to betray everything we've done. You know what I mean? Like that he used the phrase, why would we change now? Why would we take a step back now? Yeah. So he equates the idea of setting up more conservatively against France with a step back. So I was thinking, is that what happens when, you know, we've talked for the last couple of years about this kind of culture war thing. And this is the problem with culture war. I mean, it makes an idiot of everybody. You know, everybody is kind of like just everyone is at war. So they're just digging into their trenches and kind of because, you know, like maybe losing the bigger picture a little bit sometimes. So if you look at, like, who's the last team to beat France? I guess it's Argentina. They didn't actually beat them. They did beat them on penalties. They won the World Cup and France didn't. Did they change for that match? Oh, yes, they did. Oh, big time. But if you look all through the World Cup that Argentina played, they were changing in every game. Mm. You know what I mean? Like the idea. Well, like remember against Saudi, they lost, and then they changed everything. They changed half the team, changed the system, got through the group. Okay, they smashed Australia. That was never going to be a difficult game for them. But against Holland, the Netherlands. That guy, I'm just thinking of that angry Dutch guy who writes in every so often. Every time Holland I say Holland, guy. I now apologize and say the Netherlands. Against Holland, they did against they the copied. Against the Netherlands, they copied Van Gaal's system. So yeah. they played 5-3-2. They weren't really defensive. They were like, okay, this is the way to play these. Against Croatia, the total opposite. They looked at Croatia and they were like, these guys are old, they're slow, they're also exhausted because they've been playing all these 120-minute matches. Let's absolutely give these guys a chasing, and went after them from the start. And if you remember, had the game won basically in the first half. I think it was 2-0 at halftime. Mm. And they hammered them. But then in the final, they took a totally different approach against France. You know, they're like, okay, well, we could do what we do against Croatia. And imagine the temptation to do that. You know, like if you're a manager and you've just won a World Cup semifinal 3-0 against a team, remember, who had beat them 3-0 in the previous World Cup, kind of a grudge match. That Croatia had got to the final of the last World Cup, a serious opposition, and they've absolutely destroyed them 3-0. And it's probably their best performance of the tournament. You must be thinking, maybe we should do that again, you know, just absolutely go out there and do that in France. Not a second. Like, he changed it completely for France. He was like, okay, France, if we leave France space, they're going to kill us. They're going to destroy us. Like, we could play as well as we did against Croatia and lose that game 4-0. You know what I mean? So the approach against France was to counterattack, you know, to play a lot of the time behind the ball and then to counterattack quickly. And obviously they scored a brilliant counterattacking goal. But okay, so what I'm saying, I guess the conclusion here is that Lionel Scaloni, who is the FIFA coach of the year, is a very different type of coach from Stephen Kenny, which is not to say that Stephen Kenny is wrong, but I think that this ability to change is increasingly a thing that makes a difference. I mean, the other big, you know, success story with this approach is obviously Carlo Ancelotti. You know, Ancelotti, who, remember the quote we were talking about recently, Ancelotti saying, well, we don't have a clear identity because I don't want one. We know how to do many different things, not just one thing. This is Ancelotti's philosophy. So I'm just wondering if, you know, there is something to be sometimes learned from that. I mean, if you do play a team like this, what do you do? Like, you have to, they have got some players who are so exceptional that if you don't take account of that, you know, it doesn't really matter how sort of tenacious you are, how brave you are, you know, it doesn't really matter. If you leave them space, they will destroy you.
Yeah, I kind of think, to be honest, once the game is on and we're under the cosh a bit, we're not going to abandon every principle, but I think naturally
the players will naturally
caution. Yeah. Caution will of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, what exactly? But what are we talking about here? Like, what do we mean? So say for instance, I think what's like because it's not totally clear what Stephen Kenny means.
Well, like, what he means is he doesn't want to start hoofing the ball. He wants to try and play possession, get a decent amount of possession, which in fairness, you might have against France. It's not like we're playing against the Germany team of 7 or 8 years ago who really want to keep the ball the whole time. Mm. France aren't as bothered about that now. They'll still, I'm sure, edge the possession stats. So it's a funny one against France. Of all the top teams around, it's possession is almost, I don't know, it's maybe a bit of a red herring or something like that, which a lot of people would say it is at the best of times. But that does seem to be what he's getting at, that we will want to get the ball and keep the ball rather than just because we're playing France, basically have a load of men behind the ball, low block and boot it long.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and with that, I'm totally with him because that stuff that we were doing, you know, under McCarthy and O'Neill and Trapattoni is absolute Stone Age stuff. You know, like you're getting nowhere with that in today's game.
Well, we'd be beat Germany and Italy and so on. But we won't rehash it.
We beat Germany in a game they didn't have to win, and we beat Italy in a game they picked their B team because they were already through.
France don't have to win tomorrow's game. Would it be
Well, that's our best hope here. That's our best hope. But I do think that is Stone Age stuff. You're not going to get anywhere. So if you take the example of Argentina, their brilliant goal on the counter. So playing on the counter doesn't mean that you play bad football. I mean, if the ball comes to you, if you get the chance, like they lacerated France with this like lightning passing move. You know, it's one of the most economical passing moves I've ever seen, like 5 players, 7 touches, goal. Like it was phenomenal. So, you know, there was obviously a really high level of quality in the, I would say, conservative approach that they took to the game. So if we're in a position where we're just hacking the ball away, then it's over. Then we've lost on all fronts. Like we will lose the game, but we've also lost our dignity. You know what I mean? But I do hope that he is. So I think that's really what he's got in mind. But I also, you know, I think sometimes you play a team like this and you just got to recognize, okay, we're going to need to sit in a little bit here and then make the possession that we have.
You're saying in one way you don't want to just sit in and so sorry, what part of it don't you agree with that?
I don't agree with kicking the ball 70 yards away. I don't agree with just booting the ball away when it gets to you as though it was a hand grenade that's about to explode.
So a bit of a low block is okay. Playing defensively, more men behind the ball than usual is okay. But when you do have it, try to keep it. Is that effectively your game plan?
When you do have it, try and attack quickly and score because they're going to be coming back. You know, this is what I think. Maybe my faith is wavering here somewhat, but at the same time, you know, I do feel like we'll see the approach that Ireland take. It's gonna be interesting. As I said, the O'Dowda thing is unfortunate. Although you're always going to have some injuries, this is just a thing that happens in football. But we are also getting to the point where, you know, Stephen Kenny, as he said, we've been working on the way of playing for the last 2 years. I mean, they've been, you know, he's been there a bit longer than that. You know, he was also there. You know, it's 2.5 years that he's been running the team. So we are sort of getting to the point now of, okay, we're kind of arrived. Like what we're going to be seeing in the forthcoming games is, this is it. You know what I mean? This is the team that Stephen Kenny's been building. What can we do? And you know, this question of tactical flexibility is a question that will arise. I mean, maybe when you're trying to build a team or when you're trying to work towards something, or you're trying to get rid of a kind of an older generation of players, bring in a new one, maybe then you've got to be quite, you know, this is the way it's got to be, this is my vision, this is, you know. But once you're sort of there, once it's like, well, we've been working on the style of play, we're comfortable in possession, all these things that he was saying, then it's like, okay, well, now it's time to see how the results go. You know, is this team actually capable of winning anything? And so that's why I think it would be damaging, like if Ireland did what Holland did on Friday, the Netherlands, I would consider that to be a disastrous outcome. I mean,
not just the scoreboard, you mean?
No, I mean the scoreboard is bad, but if we were to do what they did and to get done like that, to make it as easy for France as they did, you know, to have balls passing through the center of a defense that's sort of up the field but not really putting pressure on the ball, or easy set piece goals going in against us, you know, this type of stuff, you know, that's a really bad performance by them. And if the same thing was to happen in Ireland, you know, to Ireland against France, who are clearly a better team, have better players in nearly every position. I mean, probably, you know, virtually every position. I would consider that to be a total disaster. We have to do better than that.
More from Ambassador Mbappe, the diplomat, on Ferguson this time. We saw some clips of him. It's his first season as a striker, an important striker for that team, but we hope tomorrow is not good for him. We want to win, we want to do a good job, but he is a good player. Just to make that clear, he's giving him the Mbappe seal of approval. Ferguson definitely is going to play, right? I've seen it kind of mentioned once or twice, oh, Ida's back fit, maybe there's not a guarantee that Ferguson's going to start.
Well, I mean, if Ferguson doesn't start, I'm sorry, but that's just the biggest joke. Like, if Ferguson doesn't
should he get sacked if Ferguson doesn't start tomorrow night?
There's going to be a lot of pissed off people if Evan Ferguson doesn't start. Evan Ferguson clearly deserves to start. right? And if he doesn't, then I don't even know what we're all talking about here. That would just be yes. an insane decision. I think Brian Kerr, now I didn't see it myself, but someone was saying to me he was doing punditry on Virgin and he said he wasn't sure if that Ferguson would start. You know, so I don't know if what he's based that on or what his rationale was. But I've seen
a couple of people write that as well. I've seen that point being made sort of, yeah, in an offhand manner.
Well, I'm sorry, but if Ferguson doesn't start, like, I really don't know what we're all doing here. How could he not start? On what possible basis could... You know,
inexperienced. You know, this is. I'm just throwing that at you. Like, he's not an experienced footballer, let alone international footballer. Yeah.
Is that the argument that people are making on? Sorry, this has passed me by. I must say, I spent the day in the car today seeing Galway against Kerry.
I haven't seen any argument being made in detail. I've seen more mentioned in passing that it's not a guarantee that he starts. I haven't seen anyone doing a real deep dive into the reasons why Ferguson should not start. You know, and it's not even.
Stephen Kenny did say that Adam Eda was fit and he was training well, and you know he'd been playing well for Norwich. So I mean, he hasn't scored. I believe this year. So the idea of him starting ahead of Ferguson, notwithstanding some possibly really good performances for Norwich, just seems like. I just can't see what he's done to warrant that. I mean, I suppose he has got more international caps. I mean, so have all of the other players in the squad. You know what I mean? Troy Parrott's got a lot more caps and he scored quite a few goals for Ireland. You wouldn't expect him to start ahead of Ferguson, would you? I mean, any of these guys might come into play alongside him. I mean, there's a dilemma with Obafemi. I mean, I think Obafemi has been kind of the pick of the bunch in terms of his all-round ability as a footballer and the kind of impact that he's made out of those players. But there is an argument also in this game that maybe you would use somebody like Ogbeni, who is more physical. You know what I mean? Maybe there is an argument. So there are these sorts of dilemmas there, yes. But in terms of whether Ferguson is going to start, I mean, like, of course he is. And if he doesn't, then... I really don't understand anything about what's been taking place in Ireland. this Ireland, this regime. I will start referring to it as the Kenny regime.
The Kenny regime. So, okay, Bazuna goals, centre backs, I presume there's not going to be any disagreement here. O'Shea, Collins and Egan.
Well, it could be Coleman.
But that's the assuming. You know, I was putting Coleman at... Oh, of course, yeah. Sorry, I was putting Coleman at right wing back. And possibly Doherty at left wing back.
I don't see Coleman playing right wing back in this game. I don't think this is a game for Coleman to be playing right wing back. Maybe right centre back. But, you know, considering the players, I mean, considering where Mbappe plays, I just don't...
So which of those other centre backs doesn't start then, of O'Shea, Collins?
If Coleman is fit and Coleman centre back, Kenny decides to pick him, and to be honest, at this stage, I think he'll probably go with O'Shea, Egan and Collins, as you say, because is Coleman fit? If he was fully fit, he might have done more training this week. You know what I mean? So, but if he comes in, it will be Coleman, Egan and Collins, I imagine. And then Doherty right, McLean left, because, you know, we're kind of... and then in midfield, Josh Cullen. I mean, Josh Cullen was at the press conference. I'm assuming he will go straight back in. Obviously, Malumbi and Knight are the other two players who've usually been playing. But then Smallbone has, Smallbone played really well the other night. What do you do with that? I mean, do you keep him as a substitute option? I think probably. And then obviously Ferguson plus one. Or maybe not.
Ogbeni got a goal the other night. I kind of think with attacking players, when one of them has literally just scored a goal.
Go with the hot hand. Big boom.
Yeah, he had some good... There were some comments from Ogbeni I saw after the game where he was basically... All the players being asked to talk about how great Ferguson was. And he did it really well because he talked about how great Ferguson was, but also almost how great they were as a partnership. He's like, Evan's amazing. Like, his ability to hold up play is second to none. And, you know, for the game to gravitate around him in that way. And of course, that's great for me because then I know when I have to time my run, around the back of the defense. And it's great. I really work well with him.
I was just thinking how it must be for these other guys. You know what I mean? Like, especially like Troy Parrott, you know, because Parrott had for a long time been like, oh, this is our guy. You know, he's going to be our new guy, and like quicker than you can say yesterday's news. Like, he's just completely, completely surpassed by this. You know, it's just, you know, what his feelings must be about that. I saw actually Denmark. I saw actually Denmark's exciting new striker, Rasmus Højlund. They've got one of their own, and his name sounds a little bit like the exciting Norway striker. Scored a hat-trick against Finland.
That's what I was thinking.
Scored a hat-trick against Finland on Thursday. Scored another two against Kazakhstan, Owen, on Sunday. But unfortunately for Denmark, Kazakhstan then scored three goals. I know, it really is quite something. 73rd minute penalty, then 86 and 89th minute goals for Kazakhstan.
Couldn't giving them a 3-2 as well, Ken.
A 3-2 win against Denmark. Sick transit Gloria Mundi. these guys have had a great run. But as of course, none other than Erik ten Hag says, all eras come to an end. So a bad one there for Denmark. Although I don't know if it's necessarily good news for Ireland to have teams being pushed into the playoff places, the Nations League playoff places, especially a team like Denmark, who takes such great joy in paddling us whenever we whenever we play them. But no, why did I bring this guy up? Well, I mean, obviously Denmark
just to stick it to Denmark. I love it, Ken. Please don't ruin it by making another
Troy Parrott. Stick it to Troy Parrott, because Rasmus Højlund, I noticed, is born on the 4th of February 2003, 1 year after Troy the boy. Troy the no longer boy, now a man. And all I'm saying is the game moves fast. You know, blink and you might miss it.
By the way, just one quick one before we get to Philippe. I remember I put a quote to you last week about Bamadele's quote talking about Mbappe. I'd love to get into a foot race with him, see how quick I am. You were saying, no, please, I do not want to hear any of the Ireland players talking like that. Well, you will enjoy Nathan Collins' answer to the same question. If you get into a foot race with Mbappe, will you be comfortable? Nathan Collins says, you don't want that to happen. You want to be smarter than that. I'm not stubborn enough to say I'm quicker than him. I know he's going to be quicker than me. So I have to read the game better and not let a foot race happen. I just thought I had to put that quote to you, Ken. I know you would have enjoyed. Nathan Collins definitely in the team.
He's wise beyond his years.
Wise words. It's true. We're going to hear now from Philippe.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Owen. I'm just back from the embassy.
The ambassador's receptions are noted in society for their host's exquisite taste that captivates his guests.
Monsieur, with this rocher, you're really spoiling us.
Well, I had some pâté, that's pretty French. Just canapés, man, you know what I mean?
It's yours.
Complete absence of Ferrero Rocher.
Excellent.
A lot of culture, good manners in football.
How many Ferrero Rocher did you shove down your gut?
This is why you didn't get invited. As if the French ambassador would poison my palate with a Ferrero Rocher.
Monsieur, with these rochers, you're really spoiling us.
I was eyeball to eyeball with the French government's representative here in Ireland.
The last time he spoke to Philippe Auclair was in the immediate aftermath of the World Cup final, which was about as dramatic a conversation as we've probably ever had. Great to talk to you again, Philippe. Hope all is well.
Yes, everything is fine. We've moved on since then, fortunately.
in many ways, but I got to say, I'm nervous. Give me a reason to not be completely fearful of this French team, because they look pretty handy. It looked like they were certainly not too knocked back by the World Cup heartbreak when they put the Netherlands to the sword there Friday night.
Yeah, okay. So the one reason to feel a little bit less nervy, anxious or whatever, is that the last time France won 4-0 against the Netherlands, they followed it with a 0-0 draw to Luxembourg.
Ah. So just a weird statistical anomaly is the one reason, is the one crumb of comfort we have to.
Well, I don't see any others.
Yeah. No, that is fair enough. The Dutch were sick and all this kind of stuff and missing some players, but it was impressive in so many ways. Like the I don't know if the Mbappe Griezmann thing was being overplayed in advance. How pissed off Griezmann was supposed to be about the captaincy, not getting the captaincy. Certainly, when he scored his goal, assisted by Mbappe, he made a great play of pointing at it, going over, and the two of them celebrating together. So that looks like it's blown over, if it ever was an issue in the first place.
It never was an issue in the first place, and it's a typical thing. They had to find a story of some kind, whip it up, and it was not even a storm in the teacup. It was a gentle breeze over a glass of plain water. There was really nothing to suggest that Antoine Griezmann was really angry. It's also such a misunderstanding of his personality. I can't quite believe it, to be honest. And yes, they made a big show of it, but you say they made a big show, they just did what they would normally do. There is no primary communication between those two. It's a team that looks pretty solid, I must say, in terms of relationship between the players, what they have shown. Obviously, when you're 2-0 up after 8 minutes, it simplifies things a little bit. But there were plenty of other sides that... they were in a really good place, which, to be honest, I was a little bit surprised about. I thought that there would be a more of a World Cup hangover. Also, the impact of quite a few important players retiring from the team. I mean, two in particular, Hugo Lloris, the captain, and Raphaël Varane, who honestly was... a guaranteed starter when he was fit with Deschamps, and actually would have been a guaranteed starter with any manager. And they're there on the pitch of the Stade de France before kickoff, taking in the applause of the crowd, saying thank you to the retirees. And you're thinking, oh, okay, all right. Then there's the Benzema situation, which was not handled very well by anybody, by the way. And you think, also you remember, in the World Cup. You were wondering which team are you going to see? Which French team are you going to see after the World Cup? Are you going to see the one who played the first half against Argentina or the one who played the second half? And the answer to that is that we saw the one that played the second half. I think that's pretty clear. It's a very young team. It's very enthusiastic. Obviously, Deschamps, he almost looks rejuvenated to me. When I listen to him in these press conferences, even when I see pictures of him, he looks a bit younger than he was like 3 years ago. He enjoys being with younger players. He enjoys the fact that he's identified quite a few players who are going to be here for a long time. I think I can understand why he would be looking like the cat who's got all the cream when you see the performance of Kolomwani, for example. Who absolutely wowed us at the World Cup every time he came on and made such an impact. And he was, again, excellent, even if he didn't score. You bring Meg Maignan in. What does he do? As his first proper game, I was going to say, it was not his first cap, but his first proper game as a France goalkeeper, he stops a penalty, gets the clean sheet. You're wondering which state Kylian Mbappe is going to be in, and he gives an assist for Griezmann's goal, which is absolutely, that goal is just wonderful. And then he leaves everybody, he leaves Danny Blind on his arse. I think there's no other way of describing it. I think it's a technical term for the fourth goal. And he looks so at ease. He looks so composed. He looks so happy. And you carry on like that. And you think, yeah, it looks great. Even Cavaminga is playing in his right position. And it's like, wow. So you're thinking, things are looking good. Things are looking up. After what had been a strange run-up to the World Cup, which was a very, very tense. A World Cup which was better than anything we'd expected, but which was also a bit of a strange one in terms of when you think of some of the games against England, for example. And France were a bit lucky at times. They were brilliant, but they were also a bit lucky. And then the retirements and the Benzema affair and all the, I mean, all the stuff affecting the French FA at the same time. And you're thinking, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that, because that is pretty interesting. I mean, there's been huge turmoil at the French Federation since the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I mean, essentially the story was that Noël Legret, who was the president, he's no longer the president, had said, correct me if I've got these details wrong, but he was the guy who decided to give Deschamps a new 4-year contract.
Yep.
When Zinedine Zidane really wanted that job,
mm-hmm.
and well, he got passed over, and Legret then said something kind of offhand, like, well, you know, if Zidane called, I wouldn't even pick up the phone.
Yeah, that's correct.
This is the quote that was reported. And then Mbappe tweeted, this is highly disrespectful and inappropriate. And before you know it, Legret's out the door. I mean, is that the power of Kylian Mbappe? Were there a lot of people angry that Zinedine Zidane didn't get the job? And I mean, how did you feel before this, before the unraveling of Legret's presidency, when he handed Deschamps a 4-year contract? I mean, how long does this guy want to be the coach of the French team?
I probably wants to establish a new world record. I mean, he arrived after Euro 2012, so that's already, you know, 10 years. I'm already projecting myself in the future here, because it feels like Deschamps will always be French manager. So that's 10 years and counting. The way it's going, I think France should qualify for the final phase of Euro 24. Then there's going to be the 2026 World Cup, and he will still be there and will carry on forever. But that's not the reason why Legret was asked to leave. I mean, certainly the words he used, he was talking to my colleagues at RMC, were not the wisest, but they were indicative of the kind of man that he is. But the main reason why he went is because there's been an internal report which has been commissioned by the Ministry of Sport in France about what was going on within the French FA, being on the financial side, but also very importantly in terms of the behavior of some of the most important people in the hierarchy, particularly in terms of what I would call sexual discrimination and sexual abuse. And Noël Legret certainly didn't come out of this report in glowing terms. And if you want to look at, I know that, you know, you're broadcasting from Ireland, so I've got to be careful. If I were broadcasting from Norway, where the libel laws are far more sympathetic to us, I would certainly let rip, but I won't. And I will just let you advise anybody who is listening, just have a quick look at Noël Legret. And, you know, Romain Molina is the name of the French journalist who's been on his case. Just have a look around and you'll see what exactly is being talked about. And you will understand that what he said about Zinedine Zidane was, it might have been the straw that broke the camel's back, but believe me, the camel's back was already groaning under the weight of the problems associated with Noël Legret. His departure from the French FA is wonderful news for French football. I think we all agreed on that, except Noël Legret. But it won't surprise you that, obviously, despite the fact he's 81 years old, and of course he's probably a vivacious 81-year-old, he will rebound as the head of the FIFA office in Paris.
Yeah, I saw that FIFA had retained his services.
Yeah.
But just on the subject of Deschamps, not to necessarily harp on this team, but you know, it is such a long time to be in charge of a team. I mean, the example that comes to mind to compare it to is I guess Joachim Löw at mm-hmm. Germany, who also won the World Cup and, you know, had a few good campaigns and stayed on. I mean, you know, this is his 11th year, I guess, mm-hmm. Deschamps. So he is where Joachim Löw was in 2017 as Germany manager. And by that time, things had really started to go pear-shaped for him. I mean, it seems as though Deschamps, and I know that you've criticized him before.
I have, yes.
On here. And, you know, his style of play sometimes seems a bit, is this really all we can do with these players? But there doesn't seem to be any kind of disillusionment or dissatisfaction or just boredom with him. I mean, he seems to be running this team I mean, the team seems to be, it's too much to say this team runs itself, but there isn't any sign of that sort of decay or stagnation
no.
that was evident already in the German team when Löw had got to this stage.
Yeah, but I think that Löw, I think you could say that when things starting to go to get a bit more complicated, it was also linked to some choices that he made at the time when he basically kicked out of the team some very important elements. You will remember that. And
Müller and Hummels and...
I mean, Müller in particular. And which is...
Whereas in Deschamps' case, these guys have removed themselves. Varane and Lloris have said that's all. That's,
And there's a good atmosphere within the camp. It's pretty obvious. I mean, I thought one of the most telling things about the game against the Dutch was at the final whistle, they all congregated to congratulate Mike Maignan, who'd stopped that pen. Dreadful pen by Memphis, but it was a penalty, and he stopped it, so it was a clean sheet. And they had not really celebrated that whilst the game was going on because they were really concentrating on the job, which is very good. But as soon as the final whistle went, they all congregated to around their keeper, which shows how popular he is, but which also shows something about the attitude of those young players. And when you look at them, when you talk to them, what is almost frightening is the maturity of these players. When you talk to, obviously, Kylian Mbappé, you know, could be prime minister tomorrow. And he might be, given the way things are going back at home.
I was going to say, there's a bit of work, there'd be a job of work to be done if he was to take that role at the moment, but... Yeah.
Well, it's not quite people think it is, but there you go. But you listen to Camavinga, for example. I mean, it's remarkable how well-balanced, smart those guys are. And they're bloody good with the football at their feet as well. So he's very happy because he can see that there is an awful lot of material to work with here. And that's despite the fact, you know, that two of the great architects of the 2018 World Cup win are not available at the moment, i.e. Paul Pogba and N'Golo Kante, and that you've lost Varane, who was probably your number one defender. You've lost him, but that's, you're finding that, Upamecano and Konate together, that actually looks quite good. There are a couple of positions perhaps we could do with a bit more depth, certainly right back. But apart from that, he looks so relaxed. He looks rejuvenated. And I think that in a weird way, the World Cup has helped, because the preparation to the World Cup had been very difficult. There was one point where 13 senior players were injured just before the tournament. So France went there really wondering what on earth is going to happen. And there were some, and I was amongst those, thinking, we've got to be careful even in the group phase, because this really has, it makes me think of what happened in 2002 in Korea and Japan. And it could go wrong, and it didn't. There were 15 really rocky minutes against Australia, and then that was it. The ship was launched, and it was a great adventure. And Deschamps really loved it. He absolutely loved it. And he showed during that tournament as well things that he hadn't shown before, which it was perhaps, I'm not talking about him the way I was talking about him before and the way many people were talking about him before. I think he was more daring, more imaginative in the way he set the team up. I thought that the deployment of Antoine Griezmann as a kind of 6, come 8, come 10, come 9 was an absolute masterstroke and showed what a great player Antoine Griezmann is, if anybody had any doubt about it.
Is that how they continued the other night? Is that the kind of role Griezmann's going to play against us? Yeah,
because you've now got Kingsley Coman, who, by the way, I'm afraid to tell you, will be fit for the game against Ireland, on the right, and Kylian Mbappé on the left, and Kolomwani in the middle, who's been excellent. And then you've got Griezmann in this kind of interesting role, because he's got Tchouameni and Rabiot as a kind of double pivot. But Rabiot obviously is somebody who also likes to take part in the attacking as an attacker, which means Griezmann sometimes finds himself lower down. And it's a position that he feels really, really happy with. And I think the best way to describe his new role is to look at the first goal that France scored against the Netherlands in the second minute, where he's the one actually getting the ball back in midfield and then busting a gut to join the attack And there's some very, very clever interplay, and the movement was of those three and those four actually up front was fantastic in the first half. Fantastic. And creates the space, and he's there and he's rushing in, and he slots that beautiful left foot shot in the corner of the net. And which was, I thought it was goal of, I mean, absolutely astounding quality as a collective goal. And obviously, when you've got that amount of talent at your disposal, you know, you don't want to leave this behind you. And he's in a great position because it suits his way of thinking. He doesn't really want to go back to a club. He's paid very well. He's not paid, of course. He's paid very well, but he's still paid like a fourth or a fifth of what he would earn as a club manager. Yeah. You know, when you see what Antonio Conte is being paid, you know, he's not paid that. A long, long, long way from that. But he has got a very pleasant job indeed.
You mentioned the centre halves, though, Philippe. And, you know, let's be honest, they got a bit of an armchair ride there on Friday night. Stephen Kenny couldn't help but note in one of his quotes over the last few days that Evan Ferguson has twice played against Kanate, against Liverpool, and he's beaten them twice, said Kenny, who I think attended one of those games. How does Deschamps operate in this way? Is there much study done on opposition? Like, is there any real fear or any sense of a game plan having to accommodate this, you know, this young superstar for the Irish team, or is it just another bunch of 11 players who they're going to swat aside?
No. I don't think he's quite perhaps as thorough in his preparation on studying the opposition as some other coaches are, right. But he's got a team together. I mean, I don't think they're anywhere as thorough as England is, for example, who've got a specialist team who devote hours and hours and hours and days and weeks to studying the opposition. I think it might come as well with the fact that, you know, France has played European final, World Cup final, and won another World Cup final. So over, you know, 6 years. So obviously you must be doing something right here. But I don't think they will have, I don't think Deschamps will have spent an awful, awful lot of time looking at the Republic and talking to my French friends. And I have a feeling that, you know, Ireland has been under the radar for quite a while, and most people in France would not necessarily be aware of the way that Kenny has been trying to make the game, you know, the way they play, evolve. People are aware of Evan Ferguson, but because of what's been happening in the Premier League, because everybody watches the Premier League in France like everywhere else. But I don't think that there is necessarily a particular fear, or they would have prepared for it. And of course, the discourse after the win against the Netherlands was immediately about, oh, that's all about Ireland. What's the point of winning 4-0 against Netherlands if we don't do what we should be doing against Ireland in Dublin? And so at least the discourse was, you know, bang, you know, on the button. I wouldn't imagine that they've spent as much time studying the Republic as they have spent, you know, studying the Netherlands, for example. I don't think I'm breaching state secret by saying that. But they will have done some work, obviously. Yeah. They will have done more work, by the way, than my French colleagues in the media, who haven't done any. So,
what do you mean by that? Is it just basically they assume football team and all that sort of stuff? Yeah,
the usual, yeah. Yeah, the usual. With a couple of perhaps the more refined analysts or commentators saying that there had been a movement away from the traditional Irish game, whatever. But there hasn't been. I haven't been struck by the depth of analysis of the Irish style in the French media, I have to say.
Well, Stephen Kenny was saying today, oh, you know, why would we change? People, the questions were along the lines of, obviously, we're playing France. They just slaughtered the Netherlands. This could get pretty ugly. Should we go more defensive? And he was, no, why would we do that? You know, we've been working on this new style. You know, this is the time to be brave, you know. So he's not going to change his approach. I wonder, though, do you think that's wise? I mean, you know, if you look at France's, you know, France's performances, I mean, teams do, I think, generally adapt their style a little bit to play against France. Argentina certainly did in the World Cup final. You know, if they're willing to accept, okay, this they've got certain players, which mean we have to change. Is there an approach that France struggled against a little bit more? I mean, have they, you know, struggled to score against teams who defend with nine men back? Is there any such pattern, or is it a case of, I mean, Stephen Kenny's argument is, well, if we did that, that's just a slow death.
Yeah.
So he's saying a quick, yeah. I mean, would you agree?
I would agree.
Is there anything that can be done?
I would say that obviously exposing yourself to counterattacks against a team that has got Kylian Mbappe and Kingsley Coman on the wings is a bit foolish. But France is very good at that, exploiting transitions, as we saw actually in the last goal. And you can see what Kylian Mbappé can do to anyone. But it's not a one-man team. That's the other thing. And they're very patient, and which is, I think, poses a problem. Because, for example, France, you know, it's supposedly the modern game is all about pressing and winning possession high up in the opposition's half, putting them under pressure. France doesn't do that. They will do that sporadically. There probably will be moments where they will do it, but they haven't really got the kind of players. When you've got Kylian Mbappé, he's not that kind of player anyway. So if you press, you've got to press as a team. So France doesn't really press very high up. Also because they know that should they press and should the opposition go past the press, they might be, you know, find themselves a little bit short in terms of numbers. Because again, the people they have got up front are not known, or were not known, apart from Griezmann, who is, you know, Mr. I don't know, he covers every blade of grass, as they say. We're not necessarily the best at doing that. So Deschamps is quite happy to sit back, quite happy. So which makes it more complicated in some ways, because how do you break them? Well, you could argue that there's maybe a little weakness on the left flank, because Jules Koundé, whatever his qualities are, is not a natural born right back. So when I say use the left flank for you, obviously, which is attacking the right flank for the French, excuse me, Koundé is not a natural in that position. So you could think, yeah, you could do that. But apart from that, they're pretty rock solid everywhere on the pitch. I'm sorry. I mean,
I'm sorry. There's no need to apologize. It's absolutely fine.
It's fine, and they've got solutions from the bench, and they've got young players who can come in and who will be, you know, maybe they're not quite as deep in terms of the players they have at disposal that they were in 2018, because there are a few players who are injured. Unavailable or who have retired, actually. Obviously, Karim Benzema is no longer there, which also changes things somewhat. But seems to have happened, by the way, without creating too much turmoil in the French camp, which some people thought might be the case.
Hardly going to be the case. I mean, he's getting towards the end. Anyway, I have one more thing to ask you, though, Philippe. I was perusing the French press in a vain search for comments about Ireland. I did find in Le Monde the report by Aude Lasjonias states that when Upamecano scored against Holland, it was a shot greeted by noisy calls of Mbappe by the home crowd, followed by what sounded like a free interpretation of Lakes of Connemara by Michel Sardou, the best musical tradition of the stand. And I thought, what?
Okay, what? Yeah.
What is this? This song, Lakes of Connemara, I discovered seems to be quite famous in France. I'd never heard it before.
Well, in France, everybody would know it. I tried to forget it myself, but but I know it, unfortunately. No, it's very, very popular. It's very popular,
This is an Irish-inspired song for Kylian Mbappe from the French supporters?
Yeah, well, yes. Well, God almighty, the places you take me to. It has to do with a kind of really romantic view of Ireland that people have in France, which is not necessarily a bad thing. And Le Connemara is is mythical for us.
Oh, say it again. It sounds better when you say it, Philippe. Describe the place name
Le
again.
Le Connemara. Le Colombard. Oh,
beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Well, listen, we'll wrap things up by asking you a completely futile question. Are you giving us any chance of repeating what Luxembourg did to France whenever that was after the last 4-0 win against the Netherlands?
It was in 2017.
2017. Can we scrape a 0-0 draw?
It can always happen. I remember a game that France won against Andorra thanks to a penalty by Frank Leboeuf in the 90th minute or something like that. And Andorra at that time was certainly not better. They were actually far worse than Ireland is now. So it's always possible. I would say, but it's unlikely. It's unlikely. The transition that France was going through is going through, and which I thought perhaps would give a real chance to Ireland. This transition seems to have been extremely swift and extremely unproblematic. This being said, it's possible to catch them on a bad day. It's possible that not all the players will be quite aware of what is expecting them. It's a very young team. Many players there are players who do not have an awful lot of caps. So it can be that they get surprised and they have a problem. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, it can happen. It happened against Luxembourg. Why shouldn't it happen against the Republic of Ireland? And it was in 2017. That was the team which was, the French team, was between a final of the Euro and winning the World Cup. So, there you go.
There we go. All right, we'll leave it on that note, Philippe. Thank you so much for trying to drum up some optimism on our behalf. Great to talk to you. Thanks a million. Enjoy the game.
Thank you very much.
Ireland lead 1-0 at the Stade de France. Well, God, Thierry Henry has controlled the ball basketball style.
I don't know if I'm feeling any better after that chat. Philippe, they're all very diplomatic, the French.
Philippe just laughing. Philippe. You have no chance.
And then trying to muster up some sort of an argument at the end because he's
sorry, there's not much I can really say console you guys.
Yeah. Ken, we've beaten around the bush long enough. What's your prediction?
My prediction is Ireland 1, France 2.
Okay.
I'd take that.
Would you take that?
You're telling me you'd bite my hand off if I offered you 2-1, a 2-1 defeat right now.
No, I wouldn't bite your hand off. I'd still, go ahead and we'll play the game. Sure. We're not declaring on 2-1. I'm just saying that if it works out that it's 2-1, I'd probably be happy enough with that. I'm going to say France 2, Ireland 0. If we got a goal against the French, that'd be swell.
But we always score.
It depends when it comes. If it comes as a late consolation, not so much. But if it comes as a goal early in the second half, to go 1-0 up, that's where
we'd have got a bit of bang for our buck there. Yeah, we'd have got a bit of bang for our buck there.
Let's get ourselves a goal.
Owen, what's your prediction?
My prediction is, I feel like I really want us to get a goal. Is it boring for me to say also 2-1 France?
No, not at all.
I can't predict we're going to get a draw out of it. And I don't want to predict that we're going to lose by 2 or 3, which is very, or more.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is plausible. So, I'm...
Under I'll, 3. I'll, we're going to lose by well, under 3 France. On.
You could always say 3-1 out. Then we'd have a goal, but also...
I was about to do that. And then I just thought, the Patriot
is like
kicked
a bit
in.
Of a paddle.
I'm an Irishman, Ken.
Did you see, incidentally, that Chelsea have said that they're disappointed with Thomas Tuchel for making public the fact that he wants to poach Anthony Barry from the Chelsea coaching staff.
Oh, wow.
That's not the sort of thing Anthony Barry would do, though. So
I don't think he would.
You're barking up the wrong tree there, Tommy Tucker.
He wouldn't walk out on G-Pot at this point of the season. Champions League still in play just because
loyalty isn't
Thomas Tuchel.
Loyalty isn't a dirty word in that house.
Incidentally, I don't know if he's... Did Roberto Martinez take Anthony Barry to Portugal where he's training... He's training Portugal now. He's still picking Ronaldo, by the way. Martinez. Yeah. Like, Ronaldo scored... two goals.
Twice against Liechtenstein, was it?
Luxembourg.
That is 197th international appearance or something like that.
I'm just sort of like, why is this still happening? But okay.
Well, Martinez, it's funny. Martinez had a quote afterwards along the lines of, age is just a number. You're one of these things. And it's like, this was your problem with Belgium at the World Cup. Yeah,
age is just a number.
The players themselves didn't think they should. The older players were like, how are we still in
the
team?
You were playing Enzo Schifo at the World Cup, Roberto.
That's literally what happened. How are we all still here? Like Belgium, like De Bruyne and Hazard just kind of looking around going, this is ridiculous. We should have been replaced years ago. We're old men. What are you thinking? And here he is with anyway, Ronaldo keeps banging them in. Luxembourg quailed beneath his lash, so that was good.
Enjoy the game, everybody. Let's hope this is the night Evan Ferguson's international reputation goes.
Supersonic!
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Ken.
Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the game. Don't forget to sign up now to hear our post-match reaction on the World Service on Tuesday. You won't hear any ads either if you become a member. The Second Campus Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Und Jan Sommer steht da, bereit, den Ball zu krallen. Mbappé gegen Sommer. Mbappé! Sommerheld! 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 Die Schweiz! Wow! Viertelfinale! Ja, ja, oder weggecheckt? Was ist los? Ja, ja, er zählt, der Treffer zählt, die Schweiz steht im Viertelfinale der Europameisterschaft. Ei, Frau, Frau, Wahnsinn.
Vorne Seiten, das ist die second time it's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
World Service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.